Live from New York City, it's The Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, on the road, filming. But we're going to share a lot today that will improve the quality of your lives. For example, I'm going to talk about how there's now links between night exposure to blue light with breast and prostate cancer. Whole lot more on health and healing. We lead the world in the most information shared about health and healing. And you'll see all that's going to come from that today. But today is commentary day. And I have my own commentary that I wrote last night. But we're also going to hear from Professor Jordan Peterson on why you have to fight postmodernism. Also, is depression a mental illness? Also, MSNBC is worse than Sinclair Broadcasting. Who says that? Former MSNBC host Ed Schultz today. And Abby Martin, who I was just told has been banned from YouTube, is going to speak with James D'Angelo on how lobbyists weaponize transparency. And by the way, just when we found out that she was banned, it's part of an ongoing program right now to ban virtually all the important voices that would challenge authority and have the skills and the scholarship and the tenacity to do it. From Chris Hedges to Cornel West, from Glenn Ford to Naily Bailey, these are people who are being diminished in their capacity to reach people over the internet, Facebook and Google, or being demonized on Wikipedia. So we have provided them now with a home, so you'll be able to hear Abby Martin on the Progressive Radio Network now. And about five others just today called, because they also no longer can reach the people who have been their core audience because of the algorithm tampering. In other words, they're on a blacklist. The new McCarthyism by the left. And so we're going to be talking about that. So today is commentary day. I will be holding forth time for you to call in between our different discussions and share your points of view on anything that we discussed today. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. From Barcelona Institute for Global Health, they're looking at blue light and how that impacts breast cancer and prostate cancer. Now, this was a international team of scientists from around the world, and they report a link between the exposure to blue light at night and higher risk of developing these cancers. And blue light, by the way, is a range of the visible light spectrum emitted by most of the LEDs and many of the tablets and cell phone screens. In fact, if at nighttime, if you look down at your wherever you have your main hard drive, you'll see it's blue. And frequently you can take a look and see the blue emanating from your computer or from your cell phone. That's not healthy. So there is evidence pointing to an association between exposure to artificial light at night and disruption of the circadian rhythm and hence breast cancer and prostate cancer. So not good. So just be aware. Always try to stay at least ideally 6 feet away from a computer. Most people, it's right on their lap, cell phones right in their ear, and most people lean into the screens on their main computer. Not good. Something that is very good is a French maritime pine bark extract. It's also called pycnogenol, P-Y-C-N-O-G-E-N-O-L. And according to the D'Annunzio University in Italy, in a peer-reviewed publication, they found that it reduces jet lag. That's big. Also reduces leg swelling that can create edema. And so if you're a flight attendant, a pilot, or if you're a frequent flyer, and especially if you do long hauls, this could really make a difference. I'm suggesting about 20 to 40 milligrams. In this study, they use 150 milligrams pycnogenol daily. And as an athlete, I can tell you pycnogenol is really good for helping with endurance. So pycnogenol reduces edema in the lower legs and ankles, in the circumference compared to the control group. It also improves sleep quality, enhances synchronization, reduces fatigue, improves visual impairment, boosts cognitive function. It does all those other things as well. So, just something to think about using if you find you need it. From the University of Michigan, a study about the lack of iron and B12 is tied to aggression in boys. Significant iron deficiency and low blood levels of vitamin B12 from boys around 8 are associated with behavioral problems when they get into middle school. And these problems exhibit as both internalized behavior, such as anxiety and depression, and externalizing actions like being aggressive and breaking rules. From the Journal of Nutrition, quote, iron deficiency is still highly prevalent in many regions worldwide. There is less data on B12 deficiency, but available evidence also suggests it may be a substantial public health problem. Now, for all the vegans in this audience, and a lot of people are going vegan, my suggestion is simply to supplement with 1 microgram per day, or excuse me, one milligram, which is 1,000 micrograms, of B12 per day. Ideally, do the same for folic acid, and both should be in the form of being methylated. And frequently you find a difference in your energy level, cognition, awareness, and spatial place, where you're not confused about where you're at. From Harvard University comes a study about how exercise could make your heart younger. So doctors and health organizations and the Surgeon General all agree that exercise is good for the heart. But possibly they didn't recognize this. In a new study at Harvard's Department of Stem Cell and Regenerative Biology, as well as Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School, they uncovered one reason why exercise might be beneficial. Exercise stimulates the heart to make new muscle cells, both under normal conditions and after a heart attack. This was published in Nature Communications, and the findings have implications for public health. Just a little background. The human heart, your heart, has a relatively low capacity to regenerate itself. Young adults can renew around 1% of their heart muscle cells each year, and that rate decreases with age. Now, considering that losing heart cells is linked to heart failure, interventions that increase new heart cell formation are very important. And here's what the author of the study said. We wanted to know whether there is a natural way to enhance the regenerative capacity of the heart muscle cells. So we decided to test the one intervention we already know to be safe and inexpensive, exercise. They're suggesting doing a 5K a day. The 5K is about 3.1 miles. I would concur with that. In fact, for all the athletes who are used to training for marathons or 20K, even 10K races, you have to be aware that when you're doing that much training, you're burning up a lot of mitochondria, and you're prematurely aging a lot of muscle cells and heart cells as well. So when you're not racing, and you shouldn't be racing more than a year at a time, you're on, you're off, you're on, you're off. That way you can race for decades. But a lot of times people get into racing and they just don't stop. Well, you're prematurely aging yourself when you do that, because you're exceeding the body's capacity to regenerate. So go out, do your training, and do 3 miles a day. Maybe on a Sunday do 6 miles. Keep it at that. That's as much as you need for ideal health, minus racing. Depending upon the length of the race, you have to train for that. But I'm talking about for the average person not looking to race, just looking to be healthier. Also, I would add a few things into this because they're talking about looking for new DNA as the cell prepared to divide. Well, I can tell you a few things that can make a difference. NAD, resveratrol, L-carnosine, pycnogenol, alpha-lipoic acid, those are also extremely important for the cell. Then, to help the heart cell live longer, magnesium, about 400 milligrams at a time twice a day, or if you have a history of heart disease, you might want to take more. Cayenne at 40,000 heat units, one capsule three times a day. L-carnitine, that's T-I-N-E, 1,000, 2,000 milligrams a day. Hawthorn will also help the heart. And coenzyme Q10, 100, 300 units a day of ubiquinol. And mixed tocopherols with tocotrienols, 400 units twice a day. Now, those are your heart-healthy nutrients that everyone should be taking to help your heart live longer. Engaging in physical activity decreases people's chance of developing depression. That's according to King's College in London. Again, this was an international team, including researchers from King's College in London, and they found that physical activity can protect against the emergence of depression regardless of age or geographical region. The researchers were in Brazil, Belgium, Australia, US, UK, and Sweden, and they pulled together 49 unique cohort studies of people free from mental illness that examined if physical activity is associated with decreased risk of developing depression. 266,939 individuals were included in the study. They followed these people for 7.4 years, and it was about 47% men, 53% women. So once the data were extracted, they found that compared to people with low levels of physical activity, those with high levels had much, much less depression. We've discussed that many times, how going out in the morning creates, in about a half hour to 45 minutes, you get the big rush, what is called the runner's high. And so you want that. Those are natural body opiates that are giving that kind of blissful feeling. So that's why people feel good after a good exercise. And also from Osaka University in Japan, oxidative stress makes difference between metabolically abnormal and healthy obesities. And oxidative stress simply is any time your body is breathing, you're creating oxygen going in, carbon dioxide coming out, and free radicals. When you're exercising, you're creating free radicals. When you're stressed, free radicals. And these free radicals are part of oxidative stress. So anything that is natural and non-toxic that lowers the risk of oxidative stress damage is going to help you. Let me give you some examples of oxidative stress. Cataracts, glaucoma, macular degeneration, diabetes, cancer, depression, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, dementia. These are all parts of oxidative stress. And that's one of the reasons that our Natural Living and Running and Walking Club, which, by the way, will be commencing in about 2 weeks, more information on that, on Sundays we meet, it's free, is a public service. And we train people how to get into shape. In any case, we always did something different. As we exercised, after exercise, every one of the athletes would be taking the antioxidants that would then trap the free radicals from the oxidative stress. So, A, they got the benefit of the exercise, and B, they had none of the downside of oxidative stress. Now, compare that with most of the running club, where you have some elite and really great runners and walkers, would be training very slowly. And some of the people say, gee, Gary, I heard that a friend of mine's training for the marathon, and here it's June, and they're up to 20 miles a day. And I said, don't worry about that. You're only going to do 12 miles. The difference is when August comes, by mid-August, that person's going to be walking around with colds and flu, their immune system is going to be collapsed, and their muscles are going to be probably 20% down. So the marathon in November, first Sunday in November, they're going to do probably 30% slower than what they had hoped to and probably injure themselves. You, on the other hand, you will peak going into the marathon, and you'll be healthy the whole time. And the marathon will be like a party. none of us run the marathon to race it. I mean, we had a group running at a 2:45, about 2:45 pace, but at the 20-mile mark, a couple of the people got cramps, so we slowed down and got them back in the race. That took about 10 minutes, so we lost some time. But we were not racing. We had raced faster than that. We were just having fun. I think we did 3:03. So for us, that was slow. For anyone else, that's pretty fast marathon because it's just party time. You know, saying hello to all the people along the route. It's a wonderful experience. If you've never done a marathon, I highly recommend it. And finally today, drinking baking soda could be an inexpensive, safe way to combat autoimmune disease. This is from the Medical College of Georgia. So a daily dose of baking soda may help reduce the destructive inflammation of autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. They have some of the first evidence of how the cheap, over-the-counter antacid can encourage our spleen to promote instead an anti-inflammatory environment that could be therapeutic in the face of inflammatory disease. And this was published in the Journal of Immunology. And they've shown that when, in this case, rats or healthy people drink a solution of baking soda or sodium bicarbonate, it becomes a trigger for the stomach to make more acid to digest the next meal, and for little studied what are called mesothelial cells sitting on the spleen to tell the fist-sized organ that there's no need to mount a protective immune response. Quote, it's most likely a hamburger, not a bacterial infection, is basically the message Dr. Paul O'Connor, a renal physiologist in the MCG Department of Physiology at Augusta University, and the study's lead author. And by the way, mesothelial cells line the body cavities, like the one that contains our digestive tract. And they also cover the exterior of our organs to quite literally keep them from rubbing together. And about a decade ago, it was found that these cells also provide another level of protection. They have little fingers called microvilli, and that sense the environment and warn the organs that they cover that there is an invader and an immune response is needed. So something that simple makes a difference. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Tonight I'm in a romantic mood, yeah. Let's take a shower.
We're at the Miserable Liberal and Ron Placone.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hi.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, listen, we've told you about establishment media and the reason why we have a show, the reason why we have people say, Jimmy, how come your show, how did it get so popular? What's your secret? And I tell them, well, all I have to do is tell the truth about Syria, and I'm immediately the best journalist in the country. And that's all it takes. There's a few other people telling the truth about it. Glenn Greenwald, who's obviously a better journalist. But I don't think he has the comedy chops I have. So, although funny. So, we've told you that Phil Donahue got fired from MSNBC in the run-up to the Iraq War because he was anti-Iraq War. He was asking questions they didn't want asked. At the time, MSNBC was owned by General Electric. General Electric was a huge defense contractor and stood to make billions of dollars from the war. So they fired Phil Donahue because he was against the war. And that's going to hurt their profits. So they fired him. And we know this is true because a memo was leaked later that revealed that. They said they fired him because he had low ratings. And it turns out he had the highest rated show on the network at the time. Then they got rid of Ashley Banfield, MSNBC, because she also spoke critically of the war. Boom. And now, so that's just two. And now here's Ed Schultz. Ed Schultz was asked a question about working for MSNBC. And, you know, I watched him when he first got fired from MSNBC, and he had nothing but good stuff to say about it. And he was glad for the opportunity, and now he's moving on. He never said why he got fired. Now he's going to tell you. And I've told you a million times that as soon as Rachel Maddow or Chris Hayes goes against the war machine or says anything that caused Comcast a nickel, they will be fired. And that's how you know they're being good little tools, because they still have those jobs and they consider themselves progressives. And Ed Schultz is going to blow the roof off it right now. So they're not progressives. Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes are now officially neoliberal scum. Okay? All right. So here's Ed Schultz being asked about his time at MSNBC. And here's, listen to what he said. It's very eye-opening.
Well, let me ask you, Ed.
But let me go back, if I may, because you said, what are the differences?
Yes.
And I want to make this very clear, and I hope your audience consumes this. There was more oversight and more direction given to me on content at MSNBC than there ever has been here at RT.
And wait, who, huh? Wait a minute. That Putin's a fascist and the thing and the what, and he lets you say whatever you want, and you're an American? And the opposite was true under our capitalistic system of networks and no.
Comcast was trying to control you?
That's
way
so,
out of character.
So, come on. That sounds like Fox News. That sounds, you know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like, oh, now I can't remember. Sinclair Media. Is that Sinclair Media? Everybody's hair's on fire about Sinclair Media telling their hosts what to say. Get ready.
And I think that it's very sad that that story is not getting out. I think it's many times I was told what to lead with on MSNBC.
Had to what? Sinclair Media, I thought. I thought it was Sinclair Media that was fascist and it was Trump. See? Exactly. People only give a when it's Trump, which reveals them to be empty, which reveals them to have their eye off the ball. The problem is the system that gave you Trump. Here's more of it. No one's screaming about this because it's MSNBC and they hate Trump.
You know what, Jimmy? I don't really watch MSNBC any longer. Maybe when I do, it's for research or for fun.
It's only for hate watch.
Right? Yes, hate watch. Absolutely. But I remember like when I would watch it and I would just go, everybody has the same lead
exact
stories.
Same stories.
And I kept thinking, well, then do they only have one production team? And
right?
This is what they decided to do?
Well, I hear you, Steph. Here's more.
Many times I was told what I was not going to do, and I've got a story that had I not been involved in it, I would have never believed it. And Phil Griffin, who I consider a friend to this day, was a watchdog, far more than anything I'm exposed to here at RT America.
So remember what we told you, that the media, instead of being the watchdog for the people, they become the watchdog for the establishment, and then they become the attack dog for the establishment, which is what they did to Bernie Sanders. They attacked him, which is what they do to Jeremy Corbyn. They attack him. That's why Washington Post wrote 16 negative stories about Bernie Sanders in 16 hours.
Did he tell you what to say? Did he tell you an angle to take?
Often. In fact, when Bernie Sanders was announcing that he was going to be a candidate for the nomination of the Democratic Party in Burlington, Vermont, I was the only cable host between Fox, MSNBC, and CNN that was there live to cover it. Now, there were live cameras there, but we had coordinated with the Sanders campaign that at 5 o'clock he was going to make his announcement, and we were going to cover this on the Ed Show. I go to Bernie Sanders' house that afternoon and interview in the backyard, about a 15-minute interview. The grandkids are running around. It's a big day for the Sanders family. He's going to announce that he's running for president. We're going to carry it live later on in the day, and we're going to run this one-on-one tape with Bernie. 3,000 people are there on Lake Champlain. It's 5 minutes to air, and I get a phone call from Phil Griffin. You're not covering this. I said, Phil, Bernie Sanders is announcing he's running for president. He's going to be a president. I don't care. You're not covering this. And it got rather contentious. And I don't. Well,
you're not covering the progressive voice who wants to upset the establishment apple cart. And people like Chris Hayes and Lawrence O'Donnell, it's so funny. Lawrence walks around like such a tough guy. He's such a tool, just like all of them. Because if he wasn't a tool, he would be fired like Ed Schultz. He goes right along, just like Chris Hayes, just like Rachel Maddow. They're neoliberal scum, and they're working against you. Just like the Democratic Party is working against you. MSNBC, Lawrence O'Donnell, Chris Hayes. I don't even need to mention Chris Matthews. It's such a waste. But Rachel, I don't think anybody thinks Chris Matthews is worth it. That's why I didn't even bother with him. But people are still fooled by Lawrence O'Donnell and Chris Hayes and Rachel Maddow. They're still fooled by them. And the people fooled by Joyanne Reed, they're not fooled by her. They're mental for her. They're mental. So here's Ed Schultz. This is jaw-dropping. Not to me, because I know exactly how this works. Because I watched. I watched how Phil Donahue got fired. Jesse Ventura, I think, also. I have to ask. I just filled in for Jesse. I have to ask.
Jimmy, I'm just having a hard time accepting that our corporate media has no integrity whatsoever. Are we sure they didn't just need him to rush to an empty podium and cover that? Are we sure?
We're going to find out, I think, Ron, what he was told to cover instead. Okay. I think we're going to find out.
Now you're asking me for opinion? I'm giving you fact right now about what happened. And other people who were there with me will attest to the fact and back me up that this is what happened. We were told that we had to cover something down in Texas that was totally meaningless, and another press conference in Baltimore, which was already had been in the news for a few days.
Who's the head of that network? Roger Ailes? Oh, no, it's Phil Griffin, who is also neoliberal scum, who works against you. He wants you so he can advertise to you and make money off you, but he doesn't want to give you accurate information, and he certainly doesn't want to tell you about Bernie Sanders and a progressive, and he certainly doesn't want to tell you about how his company is the worst company in the world to work for. He doesn't want to talk about any of that stuff. That's who that is.
Okay, we're going to play the other clip in a moment, but that gives you an idea, because rarely, if ever, do you hear former top anchors on a network tell the truth about censorship. I will say this, however. In all my time in commercial radio on ABC network and WABC, with the number one radio program in its time slot in history, not before or after has there ever been that, and we're actually going to put our arbitrons up so you can see it, of 5,500 radio programs in the United States, it was number one every single rating period for 12 years. On WMCA, I was on with Alan Colmes. He followed me. And Barry Farber. Never once censored. Never once told what I could say or not say. On WR, same. WED for 13 years, the same. In fact, I've never been censored once in my entire broadcasting career on commercial radio. But I've been censored a lot on Pacifica. In fact, the only place I've ever been censored is on... I was on the People's Station. We pride ourselves in freedom of speech. No, you don't. Want me to give specifics? Which program directors twice took me off the air for 12 days once and a year when a station manager took me off because I was talking about what they didn't want to hear? Yeah. And what about the Pacifica National? When was the last time you heard about the politics of AIDS and how many of the gay organizations made a lot of money promoting toxic drugs, and how many people died using AZT? Don't want to hear that story? Okay. Well, that's censorship. Don't want to hear about vaccines being dangerous? That's censorship. So what they're saying is absolutely common over at MSNBC. But at least, good for you, Ed Schultz. You stood up, you said the right thing, you told the truth, and you're a person of integrity. I appreciate that. Now, before we go to our next clip, which is, that was about MSNBC worse than Sinclair Broadcasting, Ed Schultz reveals, and that was on the Jimmy Dore show. And Jimmy's kind of funny, and he lets it really hang out, but he gets some really good stories, so I'd recommend you listen to him. He can be a little vulgar, but if you can handle that, The information is spot on. We're just going in studio in New York City right now because standing by is our executive producer of our film division, Valerie Van Cleef. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
Good. I just saw from our engineer that you were in studio. What's up?
I am. Well, I know you've been out on the road filming for a while now. In fact, I'm just putting a lot of footage online today, this week. But I wanted to bring you up to date on some of the awards that your other films have been winning, in case you're not aware of all of them, and maybe your audience would like to know, too. And, for instance, with Plantcoats, some of the awards that it's won, Doctors Without Borders Film Festival, the Best of Show, the Global Independent Film Award, Best Documentary, Best Screenplay, from the Global Independent, Best Documentary, the Hollywood Film Festival, Award of Excellence, Platinum Winner Director of the International Independent Film Awards, the Platinum Winner Independent Film Awards for Best Documentary, Los Angeles Film Festival Award Best Documentary, Platinum Award for the Mind Film Festival in Los Angeles, the Gold Award for the Spotlight Documentary Film Awards, the LA Underground Film Forum, the Jury Award Best of Festival. You got that at the World Fest Houston Award, which is a very big festival. The International Cinema of Industry, you won the Silver Award, and the London International Film Festival, the Best Documentary. And that's for Plantcoats. And we've just put the latest film out, Deadly Deception, Exposing the Dangers of Vaccines, out on the circuit. And this is since January. It's won the Golden Galaxy Award, the Best of Festival, the Depth of Field International Film Festival Exceptional Merit Award, Best Documentary in the Global Film Festival and the Hollywood International Moving Film Festival, and Best Director, Los Angeles Independent Film Festival Award. So that's just since January. Pretty good.
It's, well, good. Thank you. I'm not aware of that because, as you know, I'm filming all day every day, and you should know because you're getting all the film overnight to start editing, and we have some really powerful stuff we filmed in the last 2 weeks, and I'm looking forward to getting at least 3 feature films shown to the public in the next 12 months, and we won't talk about the films. We'll let people know about them when they come, but at least now people are recognizing that there's quality information that they can use, because when I do a film, I always think if I were a person, for example, with Deadly Deception, if I were as a parent and my child had been normal and gotten vaccines and then ended up autistic, and if no one wanted to take the responsibility that the vaccines were it and it's all on me, and I know I didn't do anything, and I don't know if there are other parents and where they're at or how to reach them, having a film that documents the corruption, that gives you specifics about the vaccine manufacturers, their lobbyists, how much they've given to legislators, the bad science they've used, the fraudulent science, the breaking the laws that they've engaged in, that might give me confidence that we could redress these crimes against humanity at some point. So all the documentaries that we do are also meant to be resources for social movements. And so thank you for your more than quarter century work up there helping to produce some of our best films.
Thank you.
And that's Val. Now, we're going to open it up for your feedback on the first issue we've addressed. And that is, well, actually, we've addressed 2 issues today. One is that the Defense Secretary Mattis knew, had absolute information, that Syria was not behind the chemical attacks. And yet, went ahead and advised the president and went ahead and had this action, bombing. And so what are your thoughts on that? And also the idea that the media, especially the so-called liberal media over at MSNBC, never takes on the important liberal issues. They're taking on the corporate issues. Everything's about Russia and Trump. And what a waste of time on that, when they could have been talking about important things that would help all of us. For example, why not all the people who are on the air I know I was told Rachel Maddow makes $36,000 a day. So what about asking all the hosts there to take in one homeless person? Now, that's not so difficult. You can interview those, and there's services in churches that have congregation members that are homeless, and so you at least have a screening, and you could meet with them. I've done it over 400 times. They haven't done it once. So why don't we have people that actually have the integrity and the spiritual values to actually live it? I'm sick of all these people acting as if they have some moral authority to lecture us on what we should be doing and how we should believe, when I haven't seen them sacrifice anything. They're just always waiting in line with their hand out and a smile, and their publicist waiting to get them on another cover of another magazine. But that's just my opinion. What's yours? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Talkback time now. And while you're thinking about calling in, we're going to go and play you that one segment from our spiritual, what is he? I don't know his name here. I'll find out his name. Is depression a mental illness?
The time limit, it's usually disabling. It's affecting the patient severely. It's a low mood or sadness. There's very little difference between sadness and depression, except by a psychiatric definition. I'm not even sure what the criteria are to make it a mental illness. This probably has something duration and depth and disability.
Are there tests that you can take to only determine?
No, there's no blood test, no biopsy. In fact, for any of the so-called mental illnesses in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, there are no blood tests, biopsies, x-rays that make the diagnosis. It's just a series of behaviors, and then if you have enough of them, then you qualify for a mental illness diagnosis. But it's basically it's sadness, and which is a normal human emotion to crisis events or losses, etc.
Right. I mean, if your car breaks down and your rent goes up and you lose your job all in the same day, mm-hmm. that would make you depressed,
that's
would
right.
it not?
Sure, that's right. But is it a mental illness is the question. And that's where they have to then say, well, if it's really deep sadness or if it lasts for a long time, then it's a mental illness. That's absurd, I think, to say that crisis events or feeling overwhelmed mm-hmm. with economic stresses or job loss or family dysfunction or just any number of millions of things mm-hmm. can cause a person to be despairing. And when you're also not sleeping well, oftentimes depression is related to being nervous about stuff. Nervousness and depression, or nervousness and sadness, are normal human emotions to all these crisis events. But to make them into a mental illness, I think, is a real weak argument that leads them to drug use.
So that wouldn't necessarily suggest a chemical imbalance.
Right. The chemical imbalance is pure theory, unproven theory. They've been trying to prove that. The psychiatric and pharmaceutical industry has promulgated that theory, hypothesis, to explain plausibly why, in a simplistic fashion, why someone has a mental illness. Oh, you have a brain chemical imbalance. There's no proof of that. There are at least 60 different brain chemicals called neurotransmitters in the brain, and they all come from food. So we may well have deficiencies of neurotransmitters, but drugs don't do anything to cure deficiencies or depletions. It's food that would be the treatment for deficiencies or depletions. And then if there are actually 60 different brain chemicals, mm-hmm. how can there be an imbalance there or a measurable imbalance? It's impossible. You know, maybe if there were only two brain chemicals, then you could maybe say, well, one is too much than the other, and then maybe that would be an imbalance. But the treatment, again, would be nutrition and food and not a drug. Drugs do not, if anything, they may cause imbalances. We know that they can cause depletions. Mm-hmm. When you're on a drug for a while, for a serotonin, there's a serotonin reuptake pump inhibitor, for instance, like Prozac and Paxil, we know that they cause deficiencies of serotonin. The treatment isn't more of the drug that causes the deficiency. The treatment is stopping the drug or cutting that down and then replenishing the nutrient that's missing.
So the cure is more harmful than the condition?
Probably is, yeah. People who are on these drugs, even totally normal people, when they've experimented, there's a famous experiment that David Healy did in Scotland where he took 10 totally normal people, gave them Zoloft.
Okay.
Within a couple of weeks, two of them were suicidal. 20% of them became suicidal. They were totally normal, never had a suicide.
I was just informed that that is board-certified physician and scholar, Dr. Gary Coles, out from Wisconsin. And I have an enormous amount of respect for Dr. Coles. He is just one of the most brilliant medical doctors and scientists in America. So you heard what he said. There is no chemical imbalance. So all the public relations, all of the advertising, all the detail, men and women going in to doctor's office, it's all fraud. Complete, total fraud. So your thoughts, I'm giving people an opportunity to call in and share them, 888-874-4888. And while you're thinking about that, I'm going to play another clip here. I just got a little email from Val. She says, sorry, I forgot. Just today, it was revealed that from the deputy director of Virgin Spring Cinemfest, which is a member of the Film Society of Lincoln Center, we just won Best of Festival. I mean, of all the films in all divisions. Good. Thank you, Val. Now, let's go over and let's say hello to Sonia from New York. And Jose, we're going to come to you next.
So, hello, Gary.
Hi.
I really love that you bring these issues to our for us to take a look at and understand what's going on. It seems that the media is limiting information. There are things they don't want us to know. And in order to find them out, we have to do a lot of research on our own. And most people don't have time to do that. And so they're living in a world that, you know, a reality that is untrue. It's not really what's going on. And it makes it very difficult for people to understand the world in which they live in, because we're getting so much false information. We're being told things that aren't true. And it's very disturbing.
You're right, Sonia. Let's expand a little further on what you just said. And thank you for calling in, because your point is very well taken. Right now, most people do not know who to believe. And because most people will use the mainstream media or, let's say, the Internet, on the Internet, you're frequently told misinformation. There are so many stories that are plants. And fortunately, we have scholars in residence, so we review every single thing we post every day on Gary Noll's Facebook, which, by the way, is, I think Jesse told me, 1.3 million people taking a look at our articles. We publish almost 50 articles a day, 7 days a week. So those are the ones that have been vetted. They're accurate. But every 24 hours, we're finding and eliminating maybe 5 to 10 that were plants using my moniker, my photograph, but it's not me. It's not real. So I've even had to hire someone just to monitor my own Internet. Who's behind all this? Behind all this is either the Pentagon, which has the largest public relations group of employees in the world, the pharmaceutical industry, which has all these bots and trolls, and they're not a lot of them. They seem like they're a lot. You could have two guys in their mother's basement on a computer getting a couple $1,000 a week, and they can send out thousands and thousands of these. They try to do three things, Sonia. First, they try to confuse people. Then they try to discredit the people that you might otherwise believe in, like you might want to believe Chris Hedges. And they'll try to make Chris seem like he's a complete mental case. And then they continue to harass. Now, the newest thing they're doing, and it's very successful, they're taking about the 250 leading progressive groups like Consortium News and Robert Perry's group and Truthdig and the Global Research. And they're no longer promoting those or allowing those to go out on the major platforms like Facebook and Google. So let's say you would go out to 10,000 people. Now you might go out to 1,000. So they don't know that they're being blocked, but that's what's happening. And just like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Abby Martin, who has, in my opinion, is the finest journalist male or female is irrelevant. She's just the finest journalist doing what she does. She goes into the belly of the beast. When she talks about Venezuela and the coup that America's supporting there to try to destabilize it, she talks with both sides. She goes into the ghettos. She talks with the poor. She talks with the wealthy. She talks with business class and students. American journalists never do that. She'll go into the West Bank. She'll go into Gaza. Then she'll go into Tel Aviv and she'll talk with people. American journalists don't do that. They only do half that. They only do what the corporate masters allow them to do. And so when you see the level of integrity in her broadcasting, that is what we're missing. So what do they do? Now they're banning her and taking off her films on YouTube. So now they're trying to censor every single voice that offers a legitimate challenge to the status quo. All the more reason to seek out those sources that you can trust. And I simply avoid. I don't read the New York Times anymore. It's a worthless paper, in my opinion. I think they'll be honest about broadcasting about a baseball game, but anything political, nothing do I trust. I thank you very much, Sonia, for calling in. Jose from New York, your turn now.
Hey, Gary Noll, it's a true honor. I'm humbled, and I really respect a lot of the work you do.
Thank you.
You're an amazing person. And so I want to just talk about the, I guess, in opposite of, you know, the bad information they give us, but the other side of the street is the information that's great that they don't give us. I haven't heard you talk a lot about hemp and the whole hemp industry, you know, which is, I guess, the one of the most marvelous natural substances we have, that there could be so much done, but I guess it was in the 1920s they made that illegal because the guy that was a senator put in legislation.
Jose, I agree with you. Hemp is a miracle food and source. It could replace all the paper that trees are cut down for printing newspapers. You could replace all that. It grows 10 times faster than a regular tree. The hemp oil is as good as olive oil. But I post regularly, almost weekly, for years, on my Gary Noll Facebook about hemp. So if you follow that, and it's free, and you just go there and look, and you'll see the articles. But I'm always up to date and sharing as much as I can on that for our audience. I post generally one or two articles per week just on the latest on the medicinal oils for brain tumors, asthma, emphysema, COPD, and allergies, and cancers. So we're putting the information out there. Just tune into the right place and you'll be able to get it, all right? But we will be doing a complete evening on the Progressive Commentary Hour in about 4 weeks from now, a whole hour devoted just to understanding hemp, its history, its politics, who's against it, that's the beer industry, and how we can do something at the grassroots level, because there's movements in every state to get us our rights to have what we want. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's now, I don't have time. Yeah, I do. I don't. I'm looking at the time on this. Abby Martin, I wanted to do a really slam dunk that she does about how lobbyists weaponize transparency, something that would have been right on spot for what Sonia was just talking about. Remember this. I make a list. Here's the list I do not trust. I don't trust Fox, except there's one exception on Fox, Tucker Carlson. I don't agree with Tucker Carlson, probably on about 20-25% of what he says, but he has done more to tell the truth on important topics than anyone else in cable. And on that, so I commend Tucker Carlson for being a journalist of integrity. I'm not happy with his interview style. He talks over his guest way too much. And therefore, the whole thing is a shouting match rather than asking people questions and listening to what they have to say. But for being on top of these issues, he was the one, no one else in the mainstream media, chose to talk about why we should be looking for the truth before we bomb. So he's good on that. He was the one, only two other shows, my show And his show did, and mine was about 6 months before, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was on talking about mercury and vaccines. No one else would have him on. Now, you think with a name like Kennedy and his father being, you know, Robert Kennedy, that he wouldn't have any problem. Oh, to the contrary, he had a lot of problems. And so I appreciate Tucker bringing on people and having some very practical stories that he shares with us. No one else do I trust on Fox. No, I mean, it's embarrassing how much of a cheerleader Hannity has been for Trump and going after issues, though he is right. And again, as much as I don't like his militarism and all the people he's had on, the John Boltons and these other war hawks, he is on to something now. And like it or not, this is not going to go away. I predict that within the next 12 to 15 months or so, there will be indictments against Comey and probably Mueller, the Clinton, Hillary Clinton, possibly Bill, their foundation, and Rosenberg and a lot of other people, because it's been exposed in the evidence of all these emails and the subpoena documents are showing that there was a cabal of very powerful people, probably around 30 to 35 people, who all had one agenda: stop Trump from being elected, and when he was, destroy him. Now, as much as I disdain Trump, and I find nothing of virtue in anything he has done, I consider him a functional illiterate, I do say this, and I've said it before. Watch Trump destroy himself. By the time he finishes his first term, you'll be lucky to get maybe 20% of his former voters to vote him. Bernie Sanders will be our next president if he runs. Now, he is now in the process of doing that. And he would be much better on all of his domestic policies. And he's got, you know, he's hyper-vigilant, being supportive of Israel, not looking at what they've done, but still a whole lot better than that. But these people had no right. The deep state raised its head out of the swamp. That was a mistake on their part. And now we see all the connections and all the intrigue. And it was Sean Hannity, as much as I do not appreciate his always America first and, you know, our exceptionalism, never taking responsibility for our absolutely disastrous history, factual history of all of our interventions, all the people who have died and suffered, been in prison, our lack of civil rights, our lack of privacy, all the things that he doesn't seem to care about. On this issue, he is 100% right. Mark my words, that's going to come out. I don't even watch CNN. I can't take it. I don't watch MSNBC. I don't listen to NPR. I don't watch PBS. These are the things I just don't engage in. If there's anything I want to find, I know the right sources up on the internet to do it. And to help those sources, I'm bringing on board Progressive Radio Network now, because their forums are being shrunk. And so I'm giving them a forum on PRN. So that's it for today. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.